deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the Disgusting Baseball Podcast, episode 203. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll be rolling along with our series previews talking about over-unders for the Guardians, discuss the Guardians' latest spring training roster cuts, and of course, answer your questions. Joining me for all that and more is Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
Are we going with the new name?
Yeah, didn't you? I know you follow the Covering the Corner account on Twitter, Merritt.
I'm sure I do not, do. Actually. So, you
know. Yeah, that is the thing. We get to be our new name now, because when this comes out, it will be... The feed will still be the Covering the Corner feed, but then by Wednesday, right, we're supposed to have everything, and then we can...
Okay, because of the bank collapse, that's right, okay.
I don't think they're related, but...
I assume everything's attached to that.
We actually had all of our podcast assets in SPV.
All my cryptos.
Yeah, but for anybody listening now and is confused, this is still, the way I described it in the teaser, was a podcast very similar to, but legally distinct from, the Covering the Corner podcast. It's basically the same thing. The Around the Corner guys will be here too, doing theirs on every Wednesday, and it'll probably release on Thursdays, but for now, this is our new podcast name. Which,
do they have a title?
It's still Around the Corner. I mean, it still works. We just couldn't use, as long as you didn't have the name.
Oh, all right, yeah.
Because I mean, that's kind of...
They got to get on our synergy, sense, yeah. You know, like yeah. Little Gross Babies or something like that. I don't know, whatever. Just spitballing here. Anyway, sorry.
What is it, like Disgust Around the Corner? There we go.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
Disgusting Prospects. Disgusting Prospects. That was at first my only, because I mean, we went back and forth with names forever, and you suggested this one, and we just kind of blew by it at first. And like, I kind of like Disgusting Baseball.
Let me circle back on that one.
Yeah. The only downside was like just saying it, I thought would be weird, because Disgusting Baseball, just because the word disgusting is disgusting, but it also sounds like disgusting, and it feeds off the Guardians last year when somebody said they played a disgusting brand of baseball and got rewarded for it. I forgot too. I was trying to find that tweet and looking back, that was a big thing for a while. Everybody was saying, I love this disgusting brand of baseball. So,
you know what?
I think this was a good choice.
I didn't like, you know, obviously there's a lot of talk about the shift and stuff too. And, I'm sure some of our listeners, still follow it. Maybe they don't know. Follow Louis Paulus on Twitter. Former
yeah,
editor.
Yeah, really good thing. Yeah.
But yeah, he wrote an article on his Substack the other day talking about the shift ban and everything. And like the BABIP in spring training right now is now up to something like 321, which would be the highest ever, which if you kind of compare that to how it drops from spring training to the regular season, it would still be about 305, which would be, again, the highest batting average on balls in play in the history of baseball, which... Matthew, I am so looking forward to being instead irritated by balls that I thought were going to be caught or thought going to be a hit ending up in a man's glove, just squirting through the infield again. Like, the number of times I think back to specifically Miguel Cabrera hitting just a hot grounder right up the middle to drive in a run and just shatter my heart again between about 2011 and 2014. It's just something that's seared in my brain forever. And we're back to that, baby, and I can't wait for it, honestly. And yeah.
It's kind of funny that your excitement is the opposite of Louis' reaction, because he didn't.
I know, yeah, he's really down on it. Yeah. I mean, you know, he's a big, one of the smartest people I've ever interacted with when it comes to talking about baseball, and he got to work for a team for a while, and obviously I understand the point of view, like that if you can't beat the shift, it's your own fault, and this is just something, you know, it's an artificial thing, you know, it's like you watch the World Baseball Classic, and like, some of the players, like, you know, they I remember I saw a clip of Shohei Ohtani walking up, expecting someone to check his hand for sticky stuff. And they're like, we're not doing that here. So, like, all the rules are different. It's kind of like when in the NBA, like, they'll go and play international. It's all a little bit weirder. Like, no other league or anything, like, no other league around the world has the same strictures. So, it is a little weird that, you know, America is doing it and no one else is, but I don't care. Like, dumb little grounders are fun and they make me laugh. And even if they're less valuable than, you know, I remember there were a bunch of articles that, like, Mike Petriello and some other guys at MLB.com wrote about how the impact will be more negligible than you think. Like, who will benefit from it? Not many people. Like, one or two people might see a spike in their batting average that will actually matter in the corresponding drop they'll see in their slugging percentage.
I always thought it was going to be more than their hypothesis, though. I'm closer to what I think Louis stumbled on, which at the backup is going to be quite a bit higher.
One has to assume also, and like, I don't want to say that like guys like Petriello are like banging the, you know, the company drum or anything like that, but every now and then you'll read, like, every time you read an article at any of the MLB.com sites, I feel like I have to take it with a grain of salt because it's literally the company telling you, you know what I mean? Like it's no different in a sense than, I don't know, this is a horrible example, but Norfolk Southern releasing a press release about how nothing's bad about the stuff being released in the air. It's like, that's, you know, I don't know if I believe you, buddy. You're the one who needs this to be a good thing. Like, so, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Louis' thing is the newsletter. If nobody already subscribes to that, it's a Substack, which is really good. I think.
Yeah, if you want to learn about cheesesteaks or cooking or politics or baseball, it's honestly, it's a wonderful smorgasbord of crap.
It's all good. It's all good.
Not bad. Yeah,
good crap. So, spring training news, there's not much because we're just kind of in the doldrums of spring training. The WBC has kind of blocked that, the worst part of spring training, which is now when baseball games are going, but none of them mean a whole lot. But the Guardians did. It's time to start trimming rosters down. Bo Naylor, George Valera, Joey Cantillo have all been optioned. I don't think anything is a big of a surprise there. We'll talk about Naylor and our over-unders, but I think it's kind of clear he needed to go to AAA. And then obviously George Valera and Joey Cantillo are both different degrees of injured. They're not going to be on the opening day roster, clearly. So they're going to go to AAA to start. So nothing terribly surprising out of the roster cut so far. I don't know that we will get anything that'll be mind-blowing before then, other than like a reliever.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much what we expected. I mean, honestly, I think the most fun part of spring training is those first like week and a half, because A, baseball game, but two, like all these weird guys I would never see before and will, you know, may never see again.
And I mean, a lot of them you still won't even see. They're not going to make it to the majors. Just a lot of players don't. This will be the only time you get to see them.
Right, like exactly,
Roman Quinn, then remember when he was totally going to make the opening day roster, and now that seems virtually zero, just because he had a good couple first games of spring. But that was fun. That's the thing that doesn't happen if there's no spring training. So just not worth reading too much on anything that happens, but it does happen, and Roman Quinn is not quite as good.
No, it takes an outsized performance to force your hand, and obviously we saw it last year with Kwan. I mean, I don't know if we're seeing it this year with someone like Will Brennan, but just because if nothing else, he's going to make the roster as a fourth outfielder or something like that, just because he is talented and young and cheap. But outside of that, like I don't think we're actually seeing anything special or surprising going on. So it's like, what day is it? When is the season starting? Is the entire operation going on here? So yeah.
Yeah, it starts the very end of March 30th at 10:10.
March 30th at 9:40 p.m. Eastern time for all the Guardians faithful out there. I already took the next day off from work, so there you go. I could watch that game.
Yeah, that's a Thursday too. So then you'll just have Friday, and you can be up till start at 9:40 again for that one. Going to Saturday half asleep. It'll be great. The one thing about the demotions I saw was that Joey Cantillo, which I don't think anybody really thought he'd be starting, but it sounded like he wasn't, not upset, but he, I mean, I guess upset in a way that he didn't get the start, because Terry Francona said he's, quote, he's a kid that's coming off some arm issues last year. He's an ultra-competitive kid, so we didn't want to hear the message from us that he's getting set down, which isn't so bad, but sometimes you got to protect the kids from themselves. So it sounds like he just wanted to be up regardless of his injury and the status of the roster, which I would assume every player is, like, even,
oh, yeah.
I'm sure Roman Quinn feels like he should be on the roster and is going to be upset if he gets cut. It's just, that's the athletic mentality you have to have when you're at this level, but I always do kind of like, as long as it's not like they're throwing chairs or whatever, I always like hearing that kids are upset about being sent down. I think that's a good sign that obviously Cantillo wants to be up and pitching in the majors, and he's going to start into the minors. And I would imagine one of, as long as he's healthy and pitches well, one of the pitchers we'll see this year at some point.
Yeah, it would be weird to have a bad player have, not bad, I'm just saying he's bad, but, you know, a guy who's not ready yet, but have a good sense who is like, yeah, you're right, I stink.
I shouldn't be. I get it. I'll get my stuff. Don't worry. I'll get an Uber. You don't have to drive me. I know. It's
fine. Skip, I am packed. Don't worry. I already called the Uber. But yeah, it's, I mean, you know, and in a sense, I don't know, maybe it's a good show that, like, the just, you know, I'm not a big culture guy when it comes to specifically baseball, honestly, just because of what an independent sport it is. And you could have a team of players that hate each other and they could still win a championship. But
right, you watched the Guardians last year and you're not a culture guy yet, Maren?
I've never, no, listen, because they didn't win the championship and a team of players who I just don't think like each other very much, and the Astros did. So, you know, I mean, I just, What am I going to say here, you know?
They got Michael Brantley, though. He's the ultimate culture guy.
That's true. He's a sweet boy, and he definitely was very visible on that team all the time and definitely had a major impact on them making the World Series. So that's
good. I would say the Phillies were a culture team, right? They were. I mean, obviously, they had Bryce Harper, which helps
a tiny bit,
but they were basically
more of a vibes team. I mean, they were just
the same thing as a culture team. That's the Zoomer term for a culture team.
I don't think of culture of big, dumb guys is a proper I think someone referred, I can't remember which podcast it was, but they referred to just the himbo team. And I don't know if that's a purposeful culture you build, but
if it works, it works. That's kind of like that's the Philly thing too. That's like when John Kruk played and that was their whole thing. They were just big, dumb guys hit baseballs. And that's also a very,
I mean, looking back, it's kind of like what Dave Dombrowski likes out of his team. Just a bunch of big doofuses just crush the ball. Like when you look back to the Marlins, the Tigers, the Red Sox, to a degree. Like, he's the reason that J.D. Martinez ended up there. I mean, what is that going to do? He just hits dongs. It's literally his name. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe he created a culture of doofery, and baseball itself is a culture of big idiots who have never grown up. So maybe that's what he leans into, and it works.
And we love them for it.
We want to hug all our big, beautiful boys, don't we? We sure do.
So speaking of big, beautiful boys, we'll start with, I guess, a relatively small, big, beautiful boy in Bo Naylor. I mean, he's a catcher, so he's not like 6'8 or anything, but
dense than anything else.
Our over unders, just to preview the year, starting with Naylor, Zips has him 477 plate appearances, 14 home runs, 9 stolen bases, 10.5% walk rate, 30% strikeout rate, 2.3 war. Do you go over and under on that one? 116 games.
Go under on that one. 477 plate appearances? That's just, I mean, I'm sorry. Like, a lot of that's waiting is coming from his defense, which would be wonderful. I know I was shot down for writing an article about this within our Slack chat, but, you know, obviously Mike Zunin is very much a placeholder of sorts, but I just.
You weren't shot down. I just don't think.
You guys were all mean to me, and I felt.
I just don't think that the blocking stat matters that much. I think he's going to be fine. They're not. He's definitely a placeholder. You're not wrong. But
it was an unkind experience. I think he'll get over 300 plate appearances. I don't even know if he'll get that many. Honestly, I think if he gets 250, I'd be surprised. But I think the batting line is probably a little lower than what we'll actually see. I like that walk rate. That's encouraging. But I think the strikeout rate is
probably right about on will be.
Yeah, the strikeout rate is, I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, I saw what he looked like when he was in the majors for all of, what, 5 games? He looked completely over his head. But I don't know. That's the thing. Like, you look at his numbers in the minors. He didn't strike out a ton. Like, I guess he had one year where he had over 30% strikeout rate, but it dropped the next year. So he could be that kind of guy who kind of takes a year to kind of get his legs under him. And we'll see how he performs this year in Columbus, because he was good last year. What, 15 dingers, 290 plate appearances, walked 12, almost 13% of the time. My goddamn. What a menace. You have to go under, though, just because that's just, I don't think they're going to play him that much. As much as this is a team that's built for the future and trying to get its young guys kind of folded into the mix, Francona is going to, especially a catcher, I just think he's just, his tendencies will shine too heavily. And he'll just want to go to Zunino because he trusts him. I mean, you can't obviously go bang the drum of the pitchers are more used to him because obviously they've never thrown to him. But Zunino is also been around for a while and knows how to catch pitchers who throw dirty breaking balls. I mean, you know, he played for the Mariners. He played for the Rays. Two teams that can, you know, the pitchers can really spin the ball. So you got to go under. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think the fact that he was optioned and no one really said a single thing about service time manipulation, I think everybody kind of gets it. Not that people's opinion on Twitter matters what the team will actually do, but I think that, nobody's in denial that he's perfectly finished product and ready to play. I mean, he's only, 23? He just turned 23 in February, yeah. So, I mean, there's no doubt he's not going to play that much. And even when he does, I don't know. I think that slash line is probably about right. I think I'll probably get on base a little more maybe, but I don't know. I think he'll have a perfectly fine rookie season whenever he starts. And I think we also should mention, because it kind of came up more today than usual, because the Will Brennan article, because we'll talk about the insane plate appearances Zips has for him. I know that Zips is not, like, these are not somebody saying he's going to get these many plate appearances. It's just like averaging the last few years. But I think these are more fun than, like, I specifically didn't want the human element of, like, depth chart and steamer and
humans
all those
are scum, so yeah.
We don't want humans. This is just us versus the cold-hearted robots. because I want to look at like the high end of what this could spit out for them to be. Because some of them we've been over, but we think they're going to play a lot. I think it's more of a fun conversation to look at, like, the robot says he's going to have 116 games behind the plate, and that's kind of insane, and probably not. But
I think it's Baseball Prospectus, where in their projections on their website, you can look at, because, you know, most projections that you get, like Zips, for instance, is like the median, like kind of the 50%. Like, this is what it's all averaged out to, of like all the possible permutations of what his season could be like. And looking at a Pecota, like the 90th percentile version of him, you're like, yeah, this is the one that's going to happen. Actually, I feel way better than this, because, you know, you can always, like, so many times the guys will quote unquote outperform their projections, and it's like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, this is just based on what they've done, and it's kind of taking an average of several different calculations of it effectively. And so it's fun. I was fun. It's like, yeah, so 90th percentile Bo Naylor, 7.6 wins above replacement. Like, yeah, hell yeah, baby. But also, too, like, catcher is just one of those positions where you don't really go up quick, right? It's such a – you can't just – you know, it's not like any other position. There's so much more, too. Like, you look at someone like Adley Rutschman is a great example of this. He's already 25. Like, I say already, 11 years younger than I am, but he's already 25.
He's basically a dinosaur at this point.
Like, but that's the thing. Like, you think of him as – he's a rookie. You literally had – is he still rookie eligible? Like, he's just barely not eligible for a, you know, rookie whatever this year. But and also, he was terrible for the first half of the season last year. And for A, it's hard to hit major league pitching. B, he had to perform in the goddamn AL East. But, you know, you look at the first half, he had 222, 302, 420. In the second half, his OPS jumped 150 points, basically. Now, his catching got better, too. Like, it's a position that's hard. You have to know the pitchers. You have to know the game. You have to read everything. And now the added rule is a little weird. You have to be able to back pick really well now, probably. But yeah, I'm completely fine with Bo Naylor not coming up right now, because I don't know, I haven't looked into, like, how many great catchers debuted before their age 21 season. I don't know. Probably less than you think. So I could use the internet to find out. But anyway.
But it's probably not many in there.
But probably not many.
They probably weren't great in their rookie year, and they did anyway. It's one of those positions where you don't want to come up until he's absolutely completely ready and everything. And
just because so much can go wrong if he's not good. You know what I mean? It's not just, oh, he's not performing, and so now we have a black hole in the lineup. Like, if he's taking his lack of performance into the field, that impacts literally everything. And
yeah, and I think it's kind of also like a no-shit observation, but it's also the reason why I think the Mike Stino signing was so good. It's just enough that you got to catcher who could be really good, and you won't need to worry about Naylor, or also you're not committed enough to him where it doesn't matter if he's not good. It was like $6 million this year. Like, if Bo Naylor is good enough and he comes up and you can push him to the side, you're not gonna cry too much over that lost bit, as opposed to like signing a guy for 3 years or whatever. So I was on board with getting Sean Murphy at one point, and maybe it will be end up being better if they would have gotten him, and if Bo Naylor doesn't pan out. But as far as figuring him out this year, I don't think they could have done much better than getting Mike Zunino on this 1 year deal. And either potentially using him as the backup if Bo Naylor is good enough, or just letting Zunino ride the whole year as long as he can and let Naylor be the backup towards the end of the year. I think there's no wrong way to handle Bo Naylor, other than bringing him up right away, which probably would have been the wrong way, but that's not what they're doing. So there's no bad way to end for him, I don't think, at this point.
Oh, Johnny Bench did come up very young and was very good.
He was all right.
His age, Jesus Christ, he was good. But anyway, I just
big hands. You know that, Merritt? It's got huge hands.
He has like 9 burgers. He fucking rules. Anyway, yeah, I did a quick search of guys under 22 or under with played catcher more than 80% of their games in a single season with the wins replacement of 4. It's been done 9 times, and 4 of them are Johnny Bench. 3 of them are Johnny Bench, excuse me. So all this to say, Johnny Bench was worth... Just one of those guys, like, oh, right, he was an absolute god. Oh, right,
Johnny Bench.
Yeah, he was 18.6 wins above replacement in between age 20 and 22. So I think, honestly, and that's a number where, like, if Bo Naylor gets that many wins above replacement in his career, like, nice, all right.
Yeah, I think they've done all right at that point.
But I'll say again, it's not a position that lends itself to being great early. It's definitely, you kind of got to work your way into it. I think a lot of teams understand that.
Next one, Aaron Civale. 21 games, 109 innings pitched, 4.21 ERA, 1.2 WAR. This one, Quincy's, or who did this one? Was it Quincy? Yeah, Quincy took the under, and I think I agree with him on the under. The vote really? Was mostly over, which apparently by your reaction, that's where you are too. I mean, I want to believe in Aaron Civale, but it's basically what Quincy's determination was, just down to the injuries. He's just had so many random weird injuries. I want to at least see him get 1 year without those. I basically feel like this could be a spot on prediction everywhere with between the innings pitch, the game started, the ERA. Like, I think he's a perfectly fine number 4 and 5, maybe not the first pitcher replaced, but maybe he doesn't finish the year. He's just hurt too much, or one of the other young guys ready to come up. But I don't know. I want to believe in Aaron Civale. He's got the fun edge stuff like Phil Maton a couple years ago with the really high spin rate, and I want to see him put it together. But at the same time, maybe he could be amazing this year just because of how much stuff he tinkers with. And if something clicks this year like it did in his rookie year, maybe he's really good again. But for now, I would take the under on this one.
He was so, like, once he got healthy last year, like, basically, he came back from injury.
He wasn't hittable for like a month, right?
Well, he had 2 months, basically. He had 8 starts between August 10th and the end of the year. And that's when he was finally a consistent, because, like, you know, he's like 4 starts to start the season. And he missed some time and 3 starts in May, 2 in June, 3 in July. I mean, we're talking, and that when once he got healthy, it was a 3.35 ERA, 3.42 fielding independent. I just, only because, and maybe this is hyper recency bias, just because of, I'm remembering that part more than the first half, but he just seemed to be getting better. And on top of that, you know, like, how many earned runs did he even have last year? Like, total. He had 53 total earned runs, and like 12 of them came in the first 2 games or something like that. Actually, he had a stretch of 4 games where 22 of his 52 earned runs came. So that's just when he was way off and definitely hurt, and there was definitely a problem going on there. I think, to your point, it's obviously, like, will he be able to throw 190 innings? And I think he will. I don't know. He hasn't shown any issues so far in spring training that I know of, and he's just getting better. Granted, he's always been a pitcher on the margins, like very much on a razor's edge. I guess he might be one guy who gets impacted kind of negatively by the lack of being able to shift a bit, but you know, the team's sort of good defensively behind him. I think that's going to be less of a problem than we think about. So,
yeah.
I just think that if he can get to 130 innings, which I think he will, I know that's more than he's ever pitched in a single season in the majors, 124 that he got in 2021, which was also his worst wins above replacement output somehow. God, wins above replacement is weird. I don't know. I think he can top that. I mean, 1.2 from a starter who, and they're saying he's going to have 21 starts. It just seems so low, I guess. I don't know. I think he can get to 25 starts and we'll be able to see it. I think he gets the 2 wins, you know. I mean, I'm an optimistic guy and I like Aaron Civale. And like you said, he's got a lot of interesting stuff going on. I think he figured some things out last year too, as far as like what actually works, considering, again, he only throws not very hard at all.
Billion pitches, though. You can just bring
exactly out like you look at his pitch type stuff, and it's all like he's throwing 25% this and 20% this, and it's all like throw normal, and he's like, never, I'll never throw normal, and you can't make me.
And his innings pitch, like the steamer and depth chart, and all that, they kind of agree with you more, which like around 24 starts they have him for, which again is not far off from what the raw zips has him at, but. So I was looking down the stretch, not to besmirch the great name of Aaron Civale, and I think he could get to like 3.35. Like if he has a really good season, I could see him potentially getting that. But he also pitched against the Tigers twice, the White Sox, the Rangers, and the Royals twice down there. Which, I mean, he's still got to be a good pitcher. It's not nothing, but
are you bringing context into this conversation?
It was the Tigers and the Royals. I mean, he did place the Mariners and Dodgers in there, and he was fine. He was really good against the Dodgers, only for...
All right, but he also gave up 6 runs in 4 innings against the Oakland Athletics on April 29th.
Like, he's still got a pitch. He's still got to be better than nothing, but maybe there's a little bit of context there towards the end. He definitely looked like a better pitcher. You're right. I just looked at it was kind of funny seeing the schedule that he pitched against there, but...
So much trash. Yeah. The Padres were in there. He's pretty good. You know, I don't know. You get the dominant... God, he had so many good starts against such shitty teams.
I think over under it's going to be close either way. I think this is a pretty accurate projection, playing time wise, stat wise, everything.
What is Baseball Reference project him out to?
What's his RBAT? Sorry, R arm, R glove.
You don't know anything. First of all, they do project him out to having pitching 121 innings. So,
but yeah, basically the same as 24 starts or so. McKenzie, 26 starts, 25 games, 162 innings pitched. 24.6 strikeout rate, 5.4 walk rate, 3.61 ERA, 2.7 WAR. Much like I said with Emmanuel Clase last week, I would just basically take whatever the over was. I didn't even look. I'd over Tristan McKenzie. I feel like no matter what the projection is, he can probably beat it next year. There's just so much I like about what he's done and what he can be. I think he's focused more on purely being just the four-seam curve slider. Like last year, completely cut off the changeup, which I think was good for him. I'd, at this point, just go with those three unless something really clicks with the changeup. And just looking at his Baseball Savant stuff last year, like his curveball, it got more whiffs and it's still really good. It just got barreled a few more times. And I noticed that like there's more run to it last year than there was in 2021. That year when it was also really good and it almost never got barreled up. It was basically the same run as a slider, but just it dropped way more. So I think that's one thing, like you could just fine tune that a little bit more and tunnel those pitches. And that'll just be combining not having that changeup that just got hammered and then pairing those two pitches well. I think he can be even better than the 2.96 ERA last year. I think he could easily hit that again. Because remember, he's only 25. I know you said before one guy was already 25, but also McKenzie's been in the league 3 years. And he's only 25, and he could still potentially pack on a little bit more muscle, and his velocity is already helped by having the wingspan of a pterodactyl. So I just think like he's got so much going for him, it can only get better. And his strikeout rate was weirdly low last year, so that gets back up again. Whether he does find the changeup or the extra velocity or pairs the curveball and slider a little better, I think there's, despite how good he was last year, I think there's room for growth and more than what the projections have met.
I think you're right. I mean, I would honestly be comfortable just saying, because what was it, 2.7?
Yeah.
I think it'll be more, yeah, three, because you're 3.6 last year, 191 innings. I mean, obviously, I just keep circling back to the inning count on this one, but again, assuming he gets up near 200 innings or even just gets, 28 starts, which is, more than what Zips projects him out to be. It's always weird, though. Yeah, and he'll come in relief for some reason. All right, whatever, man. Yeah, I think he can cry. That one does seem conservative for a 25-year-old who has generally gotten better every single year. I mean, obviously the ERA has kind of bounced back and forth a little bit, but he's gotten more effectively better, I think, every single year. The only thing that's really gotten worse would be like strikeout rates, but
at the same time, his walk rate went down.
Exactly. It's like he cut his walk rate more than half, like between 1 year and the next, and he's just been so effective with it. I mean, I'm not like skeptical every time I watch him pitch. I think I'm more just like amazed at how effective he is sometimes, because I'm just like, but he's so skinny. What's going on here? Like, will he break? I'm worried.
He's always way more dominant than like game to game. He looks more dominant than you think he'd be. He always is.
Exactly. Like he's very much a pitcher where like Bieber, I'll watch and you can just see him shitting on people. Or even greater pitchers than Bieber, obviously. You see who's a good pitcher. Who's good these days, Matt? Who's a good
Shane
pitcher?
Bieber, damn it. Maybe he said that one.
Garrett Cole. Yeah, you see Garrett Cole going there and just mokey. Like, yeah, of course, he's ridiculous. He's huge. But then like McKenzie's one where like I'm watching him pitch and like it seems like he's like fighting at times. But you look at the end of the game, he's gone 7 innings, allowed 2 or 3 runs. He struck out 8 and you're like, nice. All right, we can do this. We can work with that. So yeah, I think he can crest that. I would take that over. Not like I think he could probably match his numbers from this year. 3.6 wins above replacement pitcher is everything you can want, and I think that's what we can get out of him this year.
Yeah, if that's his peak, I'm fine with that.
Like, yeah, for just, a few more years. Just chilling out. Yeah, 3.5 to 4 wins. Like you make a lot of money doing that as a pitcher, and you can win a lot of games doing that too. So
yeah, James Karinchak, 55 games, 54 innings pitched. 3.33 ERA, 0.6 WAR. I guess, sure. I don't know what to think of James Karinchak anymore. It looked like he just couldn't figure out how to pitch when the sticky stuff got banned, and then he figured it out. He struck out a ton of batters, and I always forget. I go look at his Fangraphs page and barely over 2 ERA last year. Like mentally, I remember being so bad at times and having that huge walk rate, but he does it, and he probably will again. He'll probably get more innings because last year he got, wasn't he sent down? He was injured. I think he got,
yeah, he missed some time. He 39 innings. Yeah, exactly. Like, he didn't pitch very much at all. He was very much a second half guy. But to your point, yeah, he's everything I just said about McKenzie. Like, you look at the numbers afterward and you're like, realize how dominant he was, even though it was like, this is insane. Like, he's just like, because he's just wiggling and like sweating and screaming. Like, every single one of his outings is just an experience.
The only thing that's going to be with him is the pitch clock if it affects him. But I think he'll figure that out. I think everybody will.
Yeah, I think he settled down after a little bit in spring training. Like, it's just one of those things where the first couple, days it was going to be strange, but once you get kind of back in the groove, that's why you wonder about these guys at the WBC, how they're going to come back to like this much more structured environment. But I see no reason why he won't hit these numbers again. Like, I don't know. Like you said, he's figured out how to work with the lack of sticky stuff. They're probably doing the same thing everyone else is. They're just using rosin and sunscreen again, or whatever the hell, or whatever the hell is in his hair, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Only thing that I could see victimizing him is just his insane fly ball rates. He's not going to get hurt all that much by balls. Ground balls up. He doesn't give up a lot of ground balls. So
yeah, he's one person who the shift will not matter unless they more people start shifting the outfield. Maybe it'll benefit
make
him
better if anything. Yeah. So yeah, 0.6 just seems only because we're talking about him throwing either 27 innings in 2020. Good lord, he was worth 1.1 wins by replacement. So I think if he gets to 54, he'll be like a 1.5 kind of a guy, because I think his walk rate will continue to be not detrimental, I guess would be one way to look at it. And he'll just, I don't know, it'll be an experience every time he goes out, and we'll just not have to worry about it too much.
Last one for this week. Will Brennan was today's article. 126 games, 555 plate appearances, 8 home runs, 10 stolen bases, 96 WRC plus, 1.4 WAR. So obviously the plate appearance is just based on the fact that he played a shitload in AAA last year. I guess, but between AAA and AA, he played a ton, 129 games altogether in the outfield. So I don't, I think both of them, I think like Zips is wrong. Obviously he's not going to get that many, but also like the actual plate appearance predictor ones are also, I don't think he's going to get only 70 games is what depth chart has, or the bat has 81. I think he gets more than that. We talked about it last year. I think he could start in the outfield this year and be quote unquote a fourth outfielder, but still get plenty of at bats early on in the season, and then maybe prove he can take over for somebody. So I think it's going to be somewhere in between these. I think he'll also be a little better than Zips has him at, which was the 257, 315, 372 slash. I think Steamer's probably closer, which had him at 272, 327, 398. A little bit more of everything there for him. I think he'll be closer to that and get, I don't know. I think eventually he's going to be the everyday outfielder somewhere. I think he's really good. I don't think he's going to be like Stephen Kwan come up and be that good, but I think he'll sneak into, he'll be like the batting equivalent of Tristan McKenzie. Like, you'll just look and he's been good for a long streak, and now he's in right field every day. And all right, let's, here we go.
Yeah. I know someone in the comments of on the article was like, he'll be like a 130 WRC plus hitter. I was like, what? Like, that's good. That'd be like the third best hitter on the team. Like,
yeah,
I think if he does, like you said, what Steamer's projected him out to with like a 107 WRC plus, I think that's found money right there, quite honestly. I think if he can pull that off, hell yeah, dude, because that's only 70 games. Like, that'd be great. Like, for effectively a rookie, like, he's not going to be a 357, 400, 500 hitter, guys. It's not going to happen. Not with a 4.4% walk rate. And that's the thing. Like, he never walked a ton. He always walked at an above average rate, but he also never struck out a ton. So,
yeah. And we were kind of mentioning in Slack, too, that I think the hate for Straw and the love for Will Brennan are like on the opposite end of extremes. So it's like people immediately just put Will Brennan in center field over Straw, which I don't think will happen quite that quickly. I think Straw only has to, I mean, we've mentioned this so many times, Straw has to do the bare minimum on offense to be an extremely valuable player. Like, maybe he won't, but he has to do so little, and they're already committed to him for a few years, that I think, unless he's just god awful, he's going to still be the center fielder, and Brennan will just platoon and get in there, but still get plenty of at bats and eventually take over. Maybe it's for Straw. Maybe it's Oscar Gonzalez on right or somewhere. But I just don't think Straw is immediately terrible as everyone wants him to be.
No, Brennan's very much and very obviously, just because of where other guys kind of are in their growth in the system, he's very much the next man up. Like you said, like, if someone really starts struggling, he's going to get consistent playing time. Worst case scenario, they start platooning him with Gonzalez or something. But even if, you mentioned Straw, obviously, even if he hits basically what Fangraphs, the bat projects him out, project Brennan out to hit 259, 311, 367, I think we're all happy with that, honestly. Because adding in the defense there, then he's going to be a three-win player, effectively. But Brennan's going to get his chances. I wish he could hit for any more power than he actually can, but he hit a home run today, which is cool. But yeah, I just the Zips was hilarious, because you're like, how many? All right, whatever. So, like you said, I think he's a very much a guy who can be an effective player not a star. I know someone, I think it was in the comments or maybe, but said he was a Brantley type of hitter. And I'm like, I don't see that at all. Like, he's never performed in any way that the way Michael Brantley, I mean, I guess 311, 382, 504 in double A, but I don't know. I guess that could be his ceiling is Michael Brantley. But again, that's a ceiling. That's not like what I expect him to pull off effectively, you know?
I think he'd more of like a lesser Stephen Kwan than Michael Brantley. Cause like Brantley's thing was always his, I mean, it was his plate approach and not striking out, but also it was the sneaky power that made him from like just a plate approach guy to being Michael Brantley. It was like the 20 home runs he could hit in any given year. I don't think Will Brennan quite has that. So he's just not a Michael Brantley quite yet. I mean, of course he couldn't evolve into this. That, but
in Mike Brantley's in Brennan or whoever's, I don't know who I'm defending here, but Brantley was not a power hitter
not a power hitter, but it's more than like two or three home runs a year.
His first, he came out in 2011,
yeah.
11, 12, and 13. Like he was a barely average hitter. Like we're talking about like 94 to 90 to 100 WRC plus.
Yeah, and see, then, he wasn't Michael Brantley then. He was just
he got dad strength. Brantley. Exactly, he had a kid, and then he got and he got dad strength from carrying. You know, it's isometrics. You carry a small child around all winter, you're going to get better core strength, better biceps. Everything's going to be better, more tone.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is, Will Brennan should have a kid.
Everybody should have a kid. Get a kid.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, you know. So I think his peak could be a 20-25 home run Michael Brantley type. 17-22 maybe. I don't know.
I think we're basically agreeing now that
you're making me defend something. I'm not even sure what.
He is kind of like pre-power surge Michael Brantley.
You're right. He really is.
But like, that's not the great. I wouldn't say he's a Michael Brantley hitter without having the power in his later years, like the doubles power and the 15 to 20 home runs. I think that's what makes him more than just a guy with a really good plate approach was the power.
I don't know if Neil Brennan has Matt is dumb. And also Will Brennan is not Michael Brantley. So it's going to be a long title with bad SEO. That's for sure.
Everybody's searching for Michael Brantley right now. They'll want that.
His contact rate was only 83%. Come on. That's nothing like Michael Brantley. Brantley was 10 points higher than that consistently every single year.
Earlier today, I asked on Twitter and Facebook. Anybody had questions? Didn't get a ton. I think everybody's kind of just watching the WBC. And
they can ask us about that, too.
Yeah, that, too. but Americanuck, I like that name. It's either American UK or it's like Americanuck, like American and Canuck. Either one I think is cool. Asked on Twitter, guards over under 180-plus wins. 180. No, 100-plus wins on 180. I don't know why I keep saying that.
Damn.
Do the Guardians reach 100 wins this year?
Can they even win 180 games? You can't win 180 games, can you?
Did you just run the math on that one?
Well, 162.
Let me get the calculator.
Four in the World Series, four in the ALCS.
Oh, you don't count those. That wouldn't
count. Shut up. I'm doing it now. Look at me count them. That's up to 170.
You can count the spring training games. You get over
it. I can count those, I guess. Then three more in the ALDS. They would not play in the wild card probably because they won 162 games.
Fucking so the Yankees most, like, would go 163-0 somehow.
I'm sorry, American. Maybe they get an extra one for some reason. Yeah. I'm sorry, extra or whatever, American. But they will not win 180 games. They will also not win 100.
I think it's an under. Yeah. I think the balanced schedule is going to hurt them because they just can't beat the piss out of the Tigers and Royals all year long.
True. And but there's also other bad teams out there. They're going to get more chances to play teams like the Athletics and the.
I mean, none of those are as bad as the Tigers.
That's true. Really yeah. Bad. And I'm thinking about all the bad teams. Like.
Yeah,
the Tigers don't have any good players. Even bad teams like the A's or the Angels, rather, have Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout.
The Tigers have Spencer.
They got guys. There's players on that team. I'm sure of it.
They do technically play the game of baseball. They have Javi Baez.
Is anyone bad in the AL East anymore?
No, because the Orioles
they're all 80 plus quality teams. You know, like as far as wins.
At the very least, the Orioles are like on the upswing now compared to.
Right, exactly. And like the Blue Jays are good. I guess the worst team in that division is technically the Red Sox. And I'm sorry, but there's just a lot of talent on that team. Like someone's going to win 75 games in that division and just be miserable because everyone else won 85 plus.
And then I think the Guardians will be like 88, 89, 90, somewhere in there. I think last year a lot went really well for him, and maybe it won't all quite as much this year. And
yeah, I mean, there's so many questions because so many guys kind of came out of nowhere. Like, and obviously as with happens every year, the roster we're looking at now is nothing like what we will see in September. I would say, I mean, I think they can get over 90. I think they can win the division. Like you said, a lot had to go right, but...
Oh, I think they'll absolutely win the division. I think the rest of the division will just be trash.
I think... So my obviously, my big worry points are right field, to a lesser extent, second base offensively.
Wait, second base?
Second base.
Are you on Andrés Giménez?
Yeah, I just... He just got so good so quickly. I was like, I don't know. It's just one of those things, right? Obviously, he was excellent, but... He was like, I don't know. Listen, that's just the way I feel. Right. I'm sorry. Shortstop, was, too, to a degree, obviously, because like all of a sudden he was like a little more consistent. So I don't know.
Yeah, but no, I posted a thing today to ask like who would people extend a contract to.
And
I was kind of surprised. Everyone said Giménez for that reason. I thought people would be kind of leery of a guy who just randomly broke out of nowhere. I mean, it wasn't completely random. Like there was some pedigree to it, but like that was a huge breakout, and everybody's ready to throw contracts at him. I thought it'd be more spread out. I thought it was kind of interesting that it was.
Oh. I should be clear, I would have gone Giménez as well.
I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah. I would extend any of them. That was the point, is I want to give any of them a lifetime contract. But
I think extending Giménez makes the most sense because it's the most premium. That's the third, one, two, three, fourth most. Damn it, that's not very high anymore. Most premium defensive position. But he could also play shortstop. You know, Kwan, I like, but he's as much a curiosity to me as an actual good player.
See, I thought Kwan like is a guy you could get cheaper, so maybe he'd be an option because I don't think he's. I think Giménez at this point you're going to be paying superstar money already, which is fine. It's not.
I think he's the one that they will extend. To be clear, yeah, I think they'll Giménez, if he goes, even if he's like 80% of what he was last year, it's like shit. Well, he's gone.
Yeah, 2 good years in a row, and he's going to be a free agent. I think that ship has sailed in signing him either way. But that's way off topic. I think the 100 wins.
You never know. People like money, and they can offer him some money instead of, some is better than none, you know.
Anything could be in this box. It could be more money. But yeah, under 100 wins, I think. That would be an awesome season to throw over 100 with this team. Like,
I think their ceiling is like 95. Money. I think they could win 95 games. I could be talked into that. I mean, if Zunino comes back healthy, if we get the good version of Josh Bell, all the young guys weren't flukes. And the pitching holds up. Like, that's a really good team. That's just a lot of things that have to go well. I think if 3 of those 5 things go well, they're a 92-win team. And I think that's, if 2 of those things go well, then shit has really hit the fan. And that's not, good.
If we get the 95 wins, you could, like, 5 games could flip-flop and sneak your way over to 100 maybe. But
that's, you're sure, buddy. That's how things work. Okay. That's exactly 100 wins, whatever. It's the same as 95.
If you get to 100, you can basically get to 120. I mean, it's basically right there.
Everyone has always said 100 wins is easy. It's just like 95.
That's just all. Like 95. Our last question this week from Jake R. Brawny. Yes, who is the next pitcher to debut for the Guardians? And then, so we've kind of answered that one before, but in parentheses, one that isn't already in the 40-man roster, which I think kind of adds.
Oh, Lord, I have no goddamn clue. You're asking the wrong guy.
I mean, this is where Touki Toussaint comes in. He's not on the 40-man roster.
That's a guy. Shit, Touki. That's right. He is out there.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be a reliever. I think Logan Island, maybe. Because he's not on the 40-man roster yet. Who is? I cannot think of his name. It's the guy who he's a lefty.
I got nothing for you. I'm sorry. I'm
Heron. Heron. Who is Heron? Dan Heron. Not Dan.
Tim Heron. Dan Heron.
Tim Heron. I think he could be one. He's not on the roster. He's at least intriguing. I think he might make it somewhere as a middle reliever. He's 26. Play a lot in AAA. It's going to be a reliever. I think. I don't think any starters are going to come up right away, and that aren't on the 40-man roster. Yeah, so basically this one, I don't think the answer is that exciting. I think
The rotation they have is,
we do apologize, but it'll be a reliever. I think Touki Toussaint can be fun. I think Tim Heron could be fun, especially because Sam Hentges isn't going to be there now. I think Heron squeezes his way in there as a lefty.
That's so gutting.
I think the bullpen's going to need more help than we want to admit right now. They're really good with a few, but...
Class A, Karinchak, Morgan, De Los Santos. Like, we're really running the list down quickly all of a sudden. Oh, God, it's going to get hairy pretty quickly there.
But also they have, depth for days.
Stefan, obviously. But
Trevor Stefan, he's all right. Oh, Tim Heron is in the 40-man roster. God damn it, never mind.
I don't know. Yeah,
I think we'll see Tim Heron soon then. But he's not the answer. Yeah, it'll be a reliever. It'll be somebody we haven't even thought of very much. But
random name face, man. Yeah, we love
that's
him.
That's the one.
We're all a fan.
That'll do it for us this week, Merritt, on our somewhat inaugural episode of Disgusting Baseball, also Covering the Corner. You can still find us at coverthecorner.com, Cover the Corner on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Matt RLY on Twitter. Mayor is at Merrill Lynch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch. I'm there. Talk to you next week.
I'll be there.